reviewing a bit what we discussed yesterday. So I introduced you a set of equations called scattering equations, which is equations for n complex variables in this form. There are n equations. And the data is given by this kinematic invariance of your n external momenta of massless particles. And you want to solve these equations for this n complex variables. The use of this equation is that they can actually give you the scattering tree-level scattering amplitudes of massless particles in a large class of theory. So today's lecture will continue this by going to gravity and also a lot of theory. So it's a slight change of plan. I'll do the soft theorem and reduce to 4D tomorrow. But today we'll just see how far we can go with this set of equations. So not only Young Mills and gravity, but also a lot of other theories, including effective field theory of some special kind. So the general claim is the following. Tree amplitudes of n external particles with momentum k1, k2, to kn, and also other quantum numbers, the polarization for particles with spin and color and so on, can always be written as an integral. So let me write it like this, of this n variables with a prime. I hope you remember that. There's an SL2C redundancy that you need to mod out. On the support of this equation, I put delta function here for all these n equations. I put n delta functions, also with a prime, because there are three redundancies of the equations. I hope you already checked that. With some so-called integrand of this, it's a rational function of the z's of the momenta and of whatever other quantum number you have for external particles, okay? So this part yesterday we already defined is a permutation invariant measure that we will just call d mu n with this SL2C redundancy mod out. And the job of today's lecture and also including the last part of yesterday is to try to determine this function to see what kind of simple form can this function have for some simple theory you want to study, like Young Mills or gravity, the special theories. As I told you also yesterday that any theory can be expressed in this form because the cubic diagram expansion can be rewritten in this form. But that doesn't mean you can have a closed formula for this integral, right? So really what's special about Young Mills or gravity or theories we'll discuss today is that they have some property like gauge invariance or soft theorem and so on to make this guy very simple. And what is this form? It's nothing, you shouldn't be scared about that because it's not really an integral. It's simply a summation of all the solutions. As I told you, there are n minus 3 factorial of them. Then you just evaluate that integrand on these solutions. So let's call it z star. Or the solution with the Jacobian, that's simply the reduced determinant of this measure, of this derivative matrix of the measure. Okay, so the Jacobian also you evaluate on the z star. So this is just saying amplitudes can be written as a summing over solutions to this fundamental scattering equations with whatever integrand you want to use here. Okay. And we give the very basic example, which is the bi-adjoint phi cube theory. Let me just introduce a notation that will be very useful later. It's this. So what we said yesterday, I mean, from even earlier lectures, we know there's a fundamental building block called Park Park-Taylor formula that we translated into our sphere, which we can write like this. Okay, this is the Park-Taylor formula with canonical ordering. And it's accompanied with the color factor. From our first lecture, you should learn that this is the trace of the color factor with this canonical ordering. And of course, in the end, what you need to do is you need to add all the permutation, all the inequivalent permutations there. So this means altogether there are n minus one factorial permutations. So we'll define this guy as a curly C, as a color factor. Okay, it's a color just Park-Taylor in this Z space. Okay, so the job of this guy is that whenever you have such a color just Z dependence, you automatically have U1 decoupling, KK relation, and BCG relation when your Z satisfies scattering equation. So this will be one of the building blocks when you deal with any theories that has colors, because we want their partial amplitudes to have these properties. So this is something important to have in mind. So from here, you can already write down the bi-adjoint scalar theory, bi-adjoint phi cube, if you want, which is simply given by this measure with scattering equation and two copy of this color factor. So one for un and one for un tilde. Yeah, I can write it more explicitly. It's the same Z dependence, but the T, the generator for this is un, for this is in un tilde. So this will give you the full amplitude, the color just amplitude for bi-adjoint phi cube. And if you start to do color decomposition, you will get partial amplitudes or double partial amplitudes as we discussed yesterday, right? So this is the first example of using scattering equation to write down some amplitude, which doesn't have much more content than saying that any cubic diagram can be expanded, can be rewritten in terms of scattering equation form. But a much more interesting example is, which we discussed yesterday, I will review now, is that for Young Muse. So we know that for n gluon scattering, again, you want something like a color factor, because it is something that it needs to encode a color dependence and it should satisfy KK and BCG relation. But we're missing something here. So if we call this the left integrand, we need a right integrand, which we still haven't specified, should depend on Z, momenta, and the polarization, and so on. So also I want to emphasize that it does explicitly depend on this momenta. It's not correct that once you have Z dependence, you can encode the momentum dependence, because Z only tell you the dependence on the Mandelstam. So only for scalar case, you can forget about this, because Z already encode all the dependence on momentum kinematic invariance. But in the vector or tensor case, you also have the K dot epsilon and so on. So the dependence on momentum are more than the dependence on the Mandelstam. So I explained to you yesterday what is the principle to determine this guy. Okay, it turns out that this guy is nothing but a reduced Pfaffian of a matrix that we introduced yesterday, which just takes this form. It's a block diagonal matrix. Sorry, it takes this form of four blocks, where you have, say, A matrix with K dot K. So this is off diagonal and this is diagonal. And B matrix with epsilon dot epsilon. And also C matrix with epsilon dot K. But now the diagonal term is non-trivial. It's the sum of the rest. Let me just write it simply like this. Okay. So why do we consider this matrix? A very important property is that this matrix has gauge invariance when your Z satisfies scattering equation. I already explained this yesterday. So that makes it perfect. I mean, that makes its Pfaffian, or reduced Pfaffian, perfect for inserting into a Young-Muse, a formula for Young-Muse amplitude, because the formula will naturally will make gauge invariance very manifest. Okay, so now I think it becomes very clear what should be the formula for gravity. So for gravity, we shouldn't have any color dependence. There's no color, but there are two copy of polarization. So the polarization vector of polarization tensor of a graviton can be written as a tensor product of this two polarization vector of gluon. So this is the on a wave function level, graviton is the double copy of gluons. And if you use the same epsilon here, they give you exactly the graviton because this is symmetric and traceless. Also, it's transverse if you dot with k for either index. And more importantly, the larger redundancy of graviton, the gauge redundancy of graviton, is encoded in both copy here. So yesterday we said the gauge redundancy here is reflected in the sense that when we replace epsilon by k, this guy should vanish, right? So here it's even a stronger requirement that when you replace either copy of this for every particle, when you replace either copy of this by its momenta, it should vanish. So this is at least the linearized version of the gauge redundancy of your graviton. So now you want to build a amplitude for n such polarization tensors. It's better to use this, but the result will not be linear in them, but bilinear in them, such that the gauge redundancy is still trivial. Because I already told you how to build an object that will vanish when you replace every copy of the epsilon by k to give you zero. And that's exactly what you want for the gauge redundancy of graviton. So I don't need to explain more, but just tell you the answer that the n graviton scattering amplitude is simply given by a determinant prime of this matrix. Sorry. And what is the determinant prime? It's a square of that Pfaffian prime. So it's just the square of that. And it can be written down more directly as this Zi minus Zj square determinant of that matrix when you delete column ij. So this is some definition we already encountered yesterday, but now it's for the determinant, okay? This matrix has two null vectors. If you study it, its A matrix has all the column and row sum up to zero, same with its C matrix. And there's another null vector. So you need to delete two column and row, compute its determinant just with this Jacobian to make it gauge invariant. So this is the definition of determinant prime. And the claim is this is the only object. Well, I owe you a proof of the uniqueness, but I can hardly imagine to come up with anything else that is multilinear in all the polarization tensors, because it's bilinear in each polarization vectors, okay? Has the correct SL2C transformation, its permutation invariant has a correct mass dimension, and most importantly, if you replace either copy of the epsilon by k, it will vanish just as the Pfaffian, okay? So this is a square of that. That's at the integrand level telling you how gravity is the square of Young mu divided by phi cube. Yes? It's coming from the null condition of epsilon. So if you take the trace, you get epsilon squared, which is zero. Right? So I'll explain now that this is not the most general construction. So let me write down this formula for you. So let's call this theory GR, but it's actually not GR in code. A more general formula, as you can imagine immediately, that is the following. You can have a Pfaffian of polarization vector epsilon. So all the epsilons. Of course, it's also depend on Z and K, but I won't write it down. I only explicitly write down the dependence on epsilon. And there's a dependence on epsilon tilde. Okay, you can imagine this to be a more general integrand. Right? This is literally double copy of Young mu, where the two copy of the Young mu doesn't have to have the same polarization vectors. So what is this theory? This theory has external particle, let's put a prime, mu nu, which is epsilon mu, with epsilon tilde nu. And this doesn't have to be symmetric or trace. This is just a generic rank two tensor, okay? And it can be decomposed into the symmetric and traceless component, which we call graviton, the anti-symmetric one, which we call the B field or anti-symmetric tensor with an anti-symmetry here, and the trace part, which we call the dilaton. It's a scalar. So if you're more familiar with the 4D spinner helicity language, you will recognize that there are two helicity state of a gluon polarization, plus or minus. If you take the tensor product of the product of two gluon polarization with the same helicity, you create a graviton, either plus two or minus two helicity. If you take the plus minus combination or minus plus combination, depending on symmetric or anti-symmetric combination of them, so this plus or minus this will give you the dilaton or B field polarization in 4D. So that's just a special case. But in general dimension, you can always take double copy of polarization vectors to obtain this tensor fields, which has this field content. So to be more precise, what's the double copy of two Yang-Mills theories? It's not the Einstein gravity, but it's Einstein gravity coupled to B fields and dilaton. I mean, some of you may be, this is just a bosonic sector of the string, low energy action that you know, this is the tensor from the, this is the Einstein-Hilbert action, but now it also has a dilaton part and something like this phi, some number here, and this H square term, where H is the field strength of your B field, right? H is coming from, H is a rank three tensor, mu nu rho, coming from your B mu nu here. Okay, so this is the theory that naturally appear as the double copy of Yang-Mills, of gluon. Of course, it contains Einstein gravity. So once you restrict yourself to the symmetric traceless external states, you recover only the graviton scattering. And that's exactly the determinant. Okay, so in general, you get two copies of Fafian that can be different. If you identify them, you get exactly a determinant, which is perfect for describing just the n graviton scattering, which is literally the perturbative general relativity. Okay, so I don't need to repeat the argument yesterday, but you can see that there's gauge invariance here and all other properties that you need for graviton scattering. But still very, very remarkable that such a simple formula with this determinant, always this two copy of Fafian, is describing this the expansion of this Lagrangian, which have infinite number of vertices. And also at Lagrangian level, it's not clear at all why this is the double copy of your Yang-Mills Lagrangian, right? So this is very, very mysterious. Of course, there's a string theory explanation from closed string and open string relation, but here we see a field theory formula directly for that. And it's not just gravity equals Yang-Mills square, because Yang-Mills also has this color part, right? So if you literally take the square of this integrand, you get too much. So you have to divide by phi q. That's what I said from the beginning, that there are many, many ways of stating this relation precisely as gravity is the Yang-Mills square divided by phi q. And we can actually write down a unified formula if you prefer to do so, for spin S, massless particle, of a single type of particle here, of this three theory, that you just take two minus S power of this, and you take the S power of Fafian. This is just to help you to memorize this three formulas. And you may wonder, can we generalize this to higher spin? You have problem, because you can have, say, three power of this Fafian, which give you a spin three particle, for example. But now you have to have a negative power of this color factor. So you would need to put it in a denominator, right? Why this has to add up to two? Because of the SL2C constraint I told you yesterday, right? This has to be altogether weight four objects. And they are individually weight two. So now you have something of this color factor in the denominator, which will cause a problem of non-locality if you compute this formula. So it will give you some non-local amplitude, tree amplitude in the end. So that means this theory is not consistent. So it seems that in this case, S can only range from 0 to 2 for this. Yes.
How does this work for, is this formula applied to fermions as well?
Yes, there's a, so I won't talk about fermion in the lectures only because of the reason that the fermions are not exactly dimensional independent. So you have to write down the representation and so on. So all we know about fermion in terms of scattering equation formula are in two contexts. The old context is that in 4D, you can definitely write down the formulas containing fermion either in the supersymmetric case, or you can write it also for massless QCD in some more complicated form. And more recently, there's some work that you can do the same in 10D. So all these are, you know, naturally come from some so-called ambitwister string formula in 10D. And as I said, this Fafian or this determinant is actually the correlator of n boson vertex operator. So if you want to consider fermion amplitude, you just replace some of the vertex operator by fermion vertex operator, you get what you want. You get some analog of this Fafian. However, the formulas are always more complicated, and it actually only working, so explicitly only working 10D. Now it start to reduce to a lower dimension. So I will stick to bosons for the rest of the lecture.
So the fact you were, is that a color factor, so there is
no Fafian.
No color factor in this gravity.
Oh, in gravity, there's no color, yeah. Gravity is this, right?
Yeah, is that the You divide this.
I mean, this is just a more precise statement, because you can square your Young mu's, but you have too many propagators, right? If you do that, so you need to divide by the phi cube, which is basically propagators. And from the formula level, it's also like that. When you square Young mu's, you not only double copied your polarization, you also double copied your color. You don't want that, so you need to get rid of that. Okay. Yes.
Assume that the particles transform the
adjoint? Yes, in adjoint representation. So for example, in if you want to deal with quarks, you have to change the beginning here. So in 4D, we know a formula for massless QCD, at least in cases with not too many pair of fermions. The formula is still quite simple, which is again given by some supersymmetric generalization of this Fafian times a Park Taylor formula, but now the color decomposition is different. It's a color decomposition with mostly gluons and some pair of quarks. That will bring you to some fundamental representation. But everything here is, yeah, for the color part is adjoint. So this is a very nice formula that unifies the three theory, and it also tells you the relation for the own shell. So this is a relation at the integrand level. I tell you that you can unify them like this. But I also told you something called KLT relation from, I guess, the second lecture, which is this gravity equals Young mu square divided by phi cube theory has an own shell version, if you remember. So if you take this Young mu's amplitude literally to be the partial amplitude of Young mu's, they form some vector, an n minus 3 factorial dimensional vector because of the BCG relation. So now, if you take that bilinear of all the partial amplitudes in Young mu's, and you use the kernel, which is the inverse of your double partial amplitude of phi cube, you get gravity amplitude. So now I'll review that. Now I'll give you a derivation of that KLT relation in one line. So this is a consequence of this representation now, if you want it. Because as I told you, the original motivation of KLT, original derivation of KLT relation is also using string theory. And the physical interpretation of that kernel set in the bilinear of Young mu's to give you gravity is not very clear from the beginning. I mean, it's all derived from the deforming the contour in string theory. But now we see very clearly that that kernel is the inverse of your phi cube theory, which you form a matrix. And I'll present you a theorem that gives this trivially. So this theorem is, if you want, a scattering equation form of the KLT relation. The theorem is the following. It's very general. It's not just for gravity Young mu's. It's actually for any formula you want. But you can apply it here. Given a formula like this. So given some amplitude, some theory that you can write it as a, in terms of scattering equation form with the I left and the I right. Okay, so this is crucial. You need a theory to have a factorized integrand. Each of them carry weight 2 of the SL2 transformation. You can introduce some linearly independent basis of so-called left and right vectors. Why they are vectors? Because they have an index alpha or beta, which runs from 1, 2 to n minus 3 factorial. So I already give you some example of what alpha and beta can be in the lecture about KLT. They can be the some permutation of external particles, right? So that's in some sense the partial amplitude, the label for partial amplitude. But here they can be anything. So if you give me some way of organizing the amplitudes into n minus 3 factorial objects, this is just form a basis. You don't need to regard them as anything. Okay, they're also function of Z. So let me write it like this. They are function of Z. Right? Everything here is function of Z. This is the integration over Z in the scattering equation form. So these are two. These are both n minus 3 factorial dimension vectors as function of Z. After you introduce this, you do a change of basis. So this is nothing but a summation over solutions from 1 to n minus 3 factorial. So let me label the solution by I. And you have your I left evaluated as solution I. I write evaluated as solution I divided by the Jacobian, this Jacobian evaluated as solution I, right? So you can literally see that already in this form it's a bilinear with a diagonal kernel in it. Now you just change your basis. Okay, let's change the basis to alpha and beta, which also n minus 3 factorial dimensional, rather than this space of solution. So you do a change of basis from the space of solution to this whatever space, say permutation of external particle. So you obtain this own shell relation. This is a relation among amplitudes as following. So this same amplitude can now be written as a bilinear of your alpha and beta, both run from 1 to n minus 3 factorial, of something we call m left. That depends on alpha. That has a label in alpha, and m right, that has a label in beta. And then something we call m inverse alpha beta here, where m left is given by, again, a scattering equation formula, whose integrand is I left, and also this L of alpha, m right is given by a scattering equation whose integrand is given by I right times R of beta. So remember, these are vectors now, right? They depend on alpha and beta, which run from 1 to a minus 3 factor. Finally, this m is a matrix now. M alpha, and it has two indices, alpha and beta, is given by a scattering equation with left and right. So this is nothing but a change of basis. I leave the proof to you that you can simply start from here and do a change of basis to here. And you will find that it's given by this two vector in this form with the inverse of this matrix. It's basically inserting this complete set of L and R and write them in that basis. So this is a simple mathematical statement that some amplitude that has a factorized form of the integrand can be written as a bilinear of two sets of partial amplitudes with a kernel that's basically the inverse of this so-called double partial amplitude of your basis. And I haven't told you anything about left or right. I just want to say that they are linearly independent vectors of Z. But in practice, what we choose is very clear from here, right? So we choose this Park-Taylor vector as our left and right. So for example, the the left just choose the canonical ordering, and the right of the canonical ordering is just this Z12, Z23, all the way to Zn1. And if you put alpha here and beta here, you're just doing the permutation of them, right? Alpha of acting on here or beta acting on here. So it's just that I don't want to say that they have to be Park Taylor. They can be anything, this L and R. This is just a simple theorem. But when they are Park Taylors, when you choose L and R to be Park Taylors, then this has a very clear physical meaning. I mean, it must be some partial amplitude that was decomposed from here because it will satisfy KK relation and BCG relation. So here you will see that from this theorem, it's KL2 relation is really not about putting two theories together to create a new theory, but you actually start from the other direction of KLT, which is you start from any theory that has this factorized form of the integrand, then you can decompose them into bilinear of two color ordered amplitudes with some kernel. Okay, so this idea of gravity equals yang mu squared divided by phi q has an own shell version that can directly follow from our formula. And in the later part of today's lecture, you will see we can use this to construct more theories if we want. So whenever we see some theory, say not yang mu, but some other theory that has a partial amplitude in it, we can ask ourselves, can we do a KLT bilinear of it with yang mu or with itself, whatever, to create a new theory? What you need to do is just collect the I left and I right of this two theory. So forget about the Park Taylor, just I left and I right of this theory. You put them together, you create a new formula. You create a formula for some amplitudes in a new theory. And then you ask yourself, is that new theory something physical? And is it something known or not? Then you will, hopefully you will find some the application of this formalism to a broader context. Okay, so this is one of the operation I want you to have in mind, that you can obtain more theories from more formulas for some new theory from formulas you already know. Okay, so let's start to search for new theories. I already told you the three theories of massless scalar, yang mu, and gravity in this unified form. Now we want to search for more. And as I said, you can also put fermions here to give you either, you know, supersymmetric gauge theory or supergravity, or even at tree level, it doesn't really matter. So you can also have massless QCD if you want. But there are much more. So the general question you want to ask is, what is the scope of quantum field theory with massless particle that this formulation can describe? The obvious answer to that is, since this guy gives you all the cubic diagrams, in principle, any amplitude can be recast in this form. But the real question is, can you find what is special about yang mu or gravity or the theory I want to talk about here? Is that they have certain symmetry or universal properties that make this integrand very simple, right? Up to now, I've only used two building blocks. One is this color building block. One is this polarization polarization building block that I've used them to just mix and match to get three very interesting theories we want. Of course, you can say, let's add higher derivative to your yang mu theory or gravity, or let's add not only phi cube, but higher vertices to a phi cube. Then they won't have this form, right? So you're generally run into very, very complicated formula for those more general theories. So we want to find what are those theories that have simple integrand. And the idea we'll use is to start from the theories we know and do some operation to them to see what new formula you produce, and then you ask what are these new theories. So one of the operation later we'll use is this KLT, but the other one is something much, much simpler, and it's almost trivial to talk about it, but I still want to give you a flavor what it happened at the formula level, which is the dimension reduction of our formula. Okay, so one big advantage of this whole formulation is that it works in any dimension, right? So you can start to do dimension reduction to obtain other theories that's related to the original ones. So for example, let's do the dimensional reduction of Young Mu's formula. And by this, I literally mean the simple dimensional reduction that still gives me the massless spectrum. So you can imagine that I have starting from d plus one dimension, I reduce to a momentum in d dimension. And here, if I put a non-zero component in the internal, so this is d and this is one. If I put a non-zero component here, it's the mass of this particle in lower dimension, right? So this is the way I say that you can use this Clausius-Klein reduction to obtain theories with mass, and that's how it works. Today we'll discuss something even simpler. We still keep it zero. So actually, when you reduce to lower dimension, you still only have the massless spectrum of your theory. But now, of course, you can, if you start from Young Mu's, you can start to create either a gluon or a scalar in lower dimension, right? So this is the reduction of our momentum, of the momenta, and you can also do it for your polarization. Now you have a choice, actually. So either you have still epsilon A here and zero here in the internal direction, then this is a gluon. And we denote this set by G. So we say A belongs to the set G, set of gluons. Okay? So this is keeping your, yeah, let me change the label maybe. This is the higher dimensional vector label. So this still has mu in it. Or you could create a scalar actually. So you could put zero here and you put a one here. So then A will be a scalar in lower dimension, right? I hope this is clear to everybody. And we call it, we denote the set as S. So I'm simply doing a dimension reduction from higher dimension, from gluon in higher dimension to gluon and scalar in lower dimension, okay? So now I can write down a formula, although you may say this is very trivial, but I want to really show you at the formula level what happened. I have a formula for a theory called Young Mu's scalar, which has this Lagrangian. It's probably familiar for many of you. That is the trace of this Young Mu's part. And there's a scalar. And also, very importantly, I can actually reduce from higher, not just reduced by one dimension. This is just an illustration, but I can start, say, from d plus small m, and this will be m dimension, and here similarly. And then I can make this more interesting. I can have more than one scalar. I can have a scalar that form this SOM group. So that's the Young Mu scalar action you encounter when you reduce it down. So this will be the index of this SOM. This flavor index for your scalar. And then you can have a term that's the following, a quartic term of the scalars. So the commutator of phi j squared, all under this trace. Okay? So this describes a theory of gluons coupled to scalars. And both of them are colored under this UN group, but the scalar additional have an SOM group, which is the internal space of your kinematics, labeled by this I and J, okay? So we have a formula to describe scattering in this theory now, because it's trivially a dimension reduction of our formula here, right? Of our Young Mu's formula. More precisely just this part, the color part doesn't change at all, okay? So the reason I want to discuss this is this will give us some new building blocks we'll later use. So let's start from this matrix. In higher dimension, in d plus m dimension, and now we can reduce it to lower dimension to see what happened here. So the A part doesn't change at all because let's look at this. Let's look at the building blocks appearing A, B, and C matrix. K dot KB is simply K dot KB, right? The lower dimension one. And let's look at epsilon A dot KB. there are two cases. Either it becomes lower dimension epsilon a dot kb if your a is a gluon, or it's zero if your a is a scalar, right? And similarly for epsilon a dot epsilon b, can be either lower dimension gluon contraction or zero if one of them is gluon, the other is scalar. Or it can be one in this one dimensional case, the internal contraction of your polarization. Or more precisely, it can be delta of IA IB, where I is the flavor index of your scalar. So if these two scalars is the same flavor, it's one. Otherwise, it's zero. It's just coming from this dimension reduction. Okay. So armed with this, let's just look at this matrix. So the A part doesn't change at all. It just becomes the lower dimensional case. It doesn't depend on whether this N particles are, some of them are gluon scalar, it's still the A matrix. So the B matrix, as you will see, depending on if your particle is gluon or scalar, it's either the original B matrix or the mixed case is zero, or here you create a new matrix, X. Let's call it X. And what is this X matrix? It's simply delta of XAB. It's simply delta IA IB over ZA minus ZB, or zero, if A is the same as B, here is different B, right? So it's basically either zero or one over ZA minus ZB, depending on the flavor of your scalar. So this is the internal, the contraction of your internal polarization for the scalars. So this X is the matrix when you have scalar and scalar, right? So this is IB, B belong to gluon or B belong to scalar. The C matrix is similar. If you have this part A is gluon, then it's a non-trivial C matrix. Otherwise, it's just zero. So this is our new matrix when we do the dimension reduction. It becomes block diagonal of this two piece, and these are zero. So that's why the Fafian, I mean the reduced Fafian of this guy, when you reduce to lower dimension, it becomes product of two. First one is a Fafian of this guy with reduced, meaning, let me use a different color. So this reduced, meaning this piece, right? So it's still a matrix of psi with AB C, C transpose, but now the second half of its column and rows only belong to gluons. You don't take the scalar ones. Times another piece, that's the Fafian of this X matrix. But also you choose it to be only with the scalar set, right? So this is the, by this scalar set, I mean this piece, that A and B belong to scalars. So this is simply the result. There's nothing mysterious here. You just take your original formula. You find that there's a formula for Yamil scalar in that Lagrangian. It's given by still this color factor. And now Fafian prime of psi with reduced entries, and then Fafian of X with scalar entries. Okay? This formula will give you all the scalar gluon scattering in this theory because it's a dimension reduction. Let's write down a special case of this, which will be very illuminating, which is the pure scalar scattering. So look at the Lagrangian. The pure scalar scattering is quite non-trivial. It has a piece that's scalar quartic interaction, just this inherited from the quartic interaction of your gluons. Also, it has a piece with scalars interact with gluons, right? So you can imagine if I have six scalar interact, I can have this Feynman diagram that the scalars form pairs of this is scalar line that they have the same flavor and same here and same here, and you interact with three gluons with this vertices and so on. So this is a Feynman diagram for this. So now you want to describe all the pure scalar scattering in this theory. It has an extremely simple form that still has this Cn, And now you just have a Pfaffian prime of A and Pfaffian of X. So this is a formula that I want you to remember. So when you try to describe the pure scalar amplitudes in this Yang-Mills scalar theory that they can interact through gluons, you have a color factor because the scalar is still a single trace under this color. And also you have an X factor that gives you all the flavor of the scalars. So they're always come in pairs. And you have a new building block that's called Pfaffian prime of A. So it's clear how to come from here to here, right? Because it's basically saying there's no gluon. So this set of gluon is empty. So this reduces the matrix shrink into this A part. And then X becomes the complete X matrix, N by N matrix. So that's why the result is the Pfaffian prime of this A and Pfaffian of X. And it's very, very important to remember that this this Pfaffian prime of A will play a very crucial role later. So this is a new building block, if you want. Or here you can view the product term as a new building block that that is inherited from this Pfaffian prime psi, but it has some new feature. It describes scalar interaction with more derivatives, right? So this A has a higher mass dimension, has k dot k in it. This X is only just a 1 over ZA minus ZB. But this A, let me remind you, the definition of A is this KA dot KB over this. So we'll see that later, when we want to build scalar theories with higher derivatives, we need these building blocks. OK, so this is just the motivation that you can do this for. You can do dimension reduction. You get a nice formula. And now you want to treat this as independent object, that you want to build more theories, more formulas of it, and ask if it's consistent. You can do the same for gravity, okay? I don't want to repeat this. You just do the same dimension reduction for gravity. You get what? You get Einstein-Maxwell theory. So it's a theory. Similarly, when you have scattering of photons, they can interact through the gravitons. You know, this Einstein-Maxwell theory. And it's actually interesting that this Einstein-Maxwell theory is basically the Yang-Mills scalar we talked about before. We talked about here, KLT with pure Yang-Mills theory. Or if you do, it depends. The dimension reduction, if you do it to both sides, to both copy of your polarization vector, you can get an Einstein-Maxwell scalar theory when you do dimension reduction. You can not only produce photon, but also scalar. And then it's a KLT double copy of Yang-Mills scalar with Yang-Mills scalar, right? So this is what we mean by KLT double copy. You take two theory, you do this, you get some new theory that's permutation invariant. So the formula for it, I let me see if I can write it down for you. For example, the pure photon case, let's write it down. In Einstein-Maxwell, the pure photon scattering formula is just to replace the CM by your original Pfaffian prime of psi. And now you still have Pfaffian prime A, you still have Pfaffian X. So this is a pure photon scattering in Einstein-Maxwell, right? So what I did is, instead of keeping the C intact, I keeping one copy of the Pfaffian intact, and I do the dimension reduction for the other copy, I get this. This gives me all the photons scattering through the propagating of gravitons. And if I do some dimension reduction to this piece again, I will also find scalars, okay? Yeah.
Going from the Yang-Mills scalar to the pure scalar, you said X becomes a larger X cross N?
Yes, so here I said, this means I choose the N by, X is defined as an N by N matrix.
Right.
And this means I take this subset of entries of X where the column and row are only those given by scalars. But since I only have scalars now, so X becomes the bigger, the complete matrix. Yeah.
But then the diagonal entries on the B side go to zero.
Yeah, this is shrink into
that
empty.
Zero.
No, so yeah, okay. In the pure scalar case, this matrix just become A, X, zero, and zero. So these are still zero,
right.
And there's no B anymore because there's no gluons. Yes. So then you take the Pfaffian of this, of course you get Pfaffian A and Pfaffian X. And this is showing you that whenever you start to consider this photon or scalar that has this flavor structure that they always come in pair, Pfaffian X and Pfaffian prime A will play a very important role. And we'll see it more and more later. So also, I want to emphasize that this is another example of the KLT, which is kind of trivial because people already know this from the super Yamil's KLT into supergravity formula. But you can see it as an example of what we just discussed, right? So you have a formula that contains a Park-Taylor. So this is a formula that has partial amplitudes. It has color ordering. Park-Taylor times some I right, which is a product of this. And you have another formula, which is the Yamil's formula, that has the Park-Taylor times the I left. That's Pfaffian prime of psi. Now, what do you do KLT with them? You remove their Park-Taylor, you put the I left and I right together, I left and I right. So you get a new formula, which is now for permutation invariant theory, doesn't have any color, which is actually the Einstein-Maxwell theory. So this means Einstein-Maxwell is the KLT of Yamil scalar with Yamil's. Or if you have both sides Yamil scalar, you get Einstein-Maxwell scalar. Okay, so there are also some another motivation for doing this is that from here, we can actually get much more out of it. We can actually generalize Yamil scalar to a generalized Yamil scalar, which is a theory. I don't know if it's well studied in the literature, but it's actually a very simple theory of adding another. Now you should be very familiar with this. Another vertex is this phi cube vertex with two copy of f, two copy of structure constant. So I j k, I tilde j tilde k tilde, and so on. So this new theory, we call it generalized Yamil scalar. We now have a formula to describe it. It has very complicated structure because your scalar can now have multi-trace interacting through gluons. They can have more than two scalar in each trace, but we have a formula for this generalized one. And in this case, what is the generalization of Einstein-Maxwell into non-abelian case that you have your photons now interact among themselves? Of course, it's Einstein-Yamil's. So I won't go to any detail of that, but this is also one of the interesting theories that we found is that you can make this lower spin particle in your theory, which before only interact through the higher spin one, you can make them non-abelian by changing the formula. So now they start to interact among themselves and you obtain a formula for all the amplitudes in Einstein-Yamil's or all the amplitudes in this generalized Yamil scalar. So that's something I won't have time to go to. But what I will discuss now is that now we have something at hand, right? We not only have this color factor, Cn, polarization factor, we have now a smaller building block, Pfaffian prime A. Why is it smaller? Because it only has weight one. Unlike those two building blocks, it's weight two object. So here, this has weight one, this has weight one, it all together give you weight two. So this is another smaller building block. But it turns out Pfaffian X is not a good building block. It doesn't give you physical theories in general, unless it's come together with Pfaffian prime A. But Pfaffian prime A can serve as an independent building block. And let's see what other theories can we get using this new building block, okay? So any questions about dimension reduction? Yeah. Sorry? Okay, if you put a non-zero mass, the theory you obtain will be with, say, the massive scalar and so on. So this is still doable. You can, at least in some special cases that people have studied, for example, you can obtain a Yamil scalar in 4D in a Coulomb branch by writing down our formula in 6D and do the Clausius-Kling reduction. But I have to say, I don't know in general if you have mass, you know, some theories with massive particle, how to write a formula for their amplitudes. So this is just a very special case. Yeah.
So the theory when you do Yang Mills, cross Yang Mills is the same as the really simple Kaluza Klein, right? It's
like Yes. This is the effective action, low energy effective action of your deep brain that you have some gluon become scalars. Yeah.
I see. So is there some easy way to see how combining two two seemingly separate theories in one lower dimension produces a theory that's equivalent to something in a higher dimension.
You mean why this action is the dimension reduction of Young Mills? That's pretty trivial. So you write down the Young Mills action and you decompose it into vector part and scalar part. So you write this A. Yeah, I didn't explain that, but this is what you do, right? So this is the D dimension and this is the one dimension, and then you can plug it in and you find this theory come out, this Lagrangian come out from your Young Mills action.
Right. So yeah, maybe I misunderstood something. But what I was actually asking about was before, when you talked about if you just take Young Mills, I'll ask you after.
Okay. Okay, sure. Yeah. So this is very different from this double copy relation, right? This is something that don't have any simple explanation at Lagrangian level. You know that it works at formula for the amplitudes, and you also have a string interpretation. But dimension reduction is something very trivial. All I want to do is what's slightly non-trivial is to apply it to our formula and see this guys appear, and that's
right.
Why I do
so,
it. But
so I was actually asking about this.
Okay.
That you said,
yep.
If you took Young Mills cross Young Mills,
you get gravity. Yeah.
You get gravity. But then what I was saying was,
oh,
if you don't restrict yourself to the case where you just get gravity, you seem to produce
scalar and photons. Yeah.
Photon, which is what you get out of like a dimension 5 compactor.
Yes. So that relation is simply a dimension reduction of this relation, right? So if you write gravity as Young Mills scale squared, you do dimension reduction on both sides, you get what you want. Einstein Maxwell scalar as Young Mills scalar times Young Mills scalar, right? So this is Young Mills times Young Mills. So this is as mysterious as this. I mean, once you understand this, you just do dimension reduction, right? So it's also clear from superstring perspective, because these are super bosonic sector of the supergravity and bosonic sector of the maximal super Young Mills, if you want. But yeah, that's basically trivial from the string point of view, but not trivial from our point of view. Okay. So what we want to do is really now to use this new building block that we just found to build some crazy object to see if it makes sense. Okay, so let's still write down a formula that has I left equals this color factor. And we want to put a different I right. What can we put here? So in the Young Mills case, we put a Pfaffian prime psi, which gives you n gluon scattering with this color factor, give you the color. In the Young Mills scalar case, or especially in the pure scalar extreme case of the Young Mills scalar, you put this Pfaffian prime x and Pfaffian x, which are both, you know, this doesn't have any polarization. These are like scalar object. But what if we only put one of them? Of course, you need to compensate the weight, so you need to take the square of them. So one choice could be this, right? Let's do this Pfaffian x square. This will satisfy the, yeah, this is just a game of mix and match that we'll play now. So we start with I left, and let's put Pfaffian x square. It has a correct SL2 weight. And what is this weird theory? This weird theory is a scalar theory that has this UN gauge group or color group, and it has two copies of this SOM flavor group. It's completely crazy, right? You don't see such a theory with three copy of flavor group. And also, it doesn't make sense, because you will soon find out already at 4 point it has double pole and so on. So it's not a physical amplitude. And it's actually easy to see, because for one copy of Pfaffian x, you already have some 1 over ZA minus ZB. When ZA coincides with ZB, you produce a physical pole, as I discussed from the correspondence of physical singularity and the Riemann sphere moduli singularity of your moduli space. So there's nothing prevent you of producing double pole when you square this, okay? So we don't want it. The first interesting case is actually, why don't we try to take Pfaffian prime A square, okay? This is actually just equivalently just a determinant prime A. And why isn't that a problem? You still produce some double pole of your ZA minus ZB. So you would expect you will see some double pole like 1 over SAB squared, just like Pfaffian X squared. But now, luckily, you have a numerator here, ka dot kb, which is sab. So it will kill at least one power of the double pole. So you won't see any double pole. That's good. So what is this theory? This theory, again, has one copy of the color factor. It's un group. You can do color decomposition. So it's a un flavored scalar theory. It doesn't have polarization, it's scalar theory. Also, I don't have any Fafian X. There's no other group. There's no SOM or whatever. Just that. Something you notice is that this object has more derivative than, for example, the bi-adjoint phi cube, right? Because this is only a function of z. Now it's a function of z with lots of k dot k in the numerator. So it's a higher un flavored, higher derivative scalar theory. Anyone has a guess what it is? So actually, the only thing you can do is just compute its 4-point amplitude, 6-point amplitude, and 8-point amplitudes, and try to see if there's a theory corresponding to it. And why I say only even number, because already from this construction, you see that Fafian of A is only non-zero if the A is an even multiplicity, even rank matrix, right? So this theory has an additional property that only even multiplicity amplitude is non-vanishing. Because Fafian prime of A has the property that if you have five particles, seven particles, it's trivially zero, okay? Sounds very weird, but there is a arguably simplest theory that satisfies this description, which is the UN nonlinear sigma model. Or known as the simplest Carroll Lagrangian in the massless case. That our theory is exactly producing you all the tree amplitudes in this theory. So let me just remind you what is this theory. It's Lagrangian has a very simple form of, say, we have a coupling lambda prime. And this has trace. This trace is the un trace of d mu u dagger d mu u, where u is the parameterized by the scalar field like this, 1 minus lambda prime phi over 1 plus lambda prime phi. This is called Kelly representation of the theory, where this phi is a matrix in UN, right? You're not familiar with this generator. Okay, so it's actually very well known theory, and it's a shame for us that we didn't recognize it until we computed its 8-point or 10-point amplitudes and ask people around, have you seen this theory before? And of course, the funny thing is that this theory has infinite number of contact terms. So every order when you compute it, in order to recognize its Lagrangian, what you need to do is you compute an amplitude, you subtract all the factorization diagram from lower vertices, say you compute an 8-point amplitude, you compute a 6-point amplitude, you need to subtract all the factorizations like 4-point, Feynman diagrams, you subtract all of them. Then what remains is that 6-point contact term. So this is a term in this expansion of this Lagrangian, because it's a nonlinear sigma model like this, parameterized. So when you expand it, it has infinite number of vertices. So then you recognize this term, and then you compute this 8-point amplitude, you recognize the 8-point vertex, and so on. So this is how you compare with the theory. Yes?
Usually nonlinear sigma models have a scale at which they get strongly coupled. Does that scale come out of this?
So this doesn't have anything higher, right? It's not like, say, the Pyle model or anything that you can. That's why I'm saying this is the simplest Carroll Lagrangian. So were you referring to higher?
Does it have higher derivative?
No, it's just, it has higher derivative, but packaged in this form. It's the simplest term that you can write down in terms of the U. The higher derivative, the term, of course, coming from here, when you have, sorry, it has higher vertices, but no more than two derivatives. Sorry about that. Yeah. So it's always, yeah, if you want, I can expand it for you, that it always has 2 d mu phi.
There's still a scale, right?
Sorry?
There's still a scale at which it becomes strongly coupled, right?
Even in this
one
case?
Time.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
But because you have a vertex here which will look like 9 mu phi, 9 mu phi, phi squared.
With phi to some power and phi to some power, yes.
Right. And the simplest is a 2-to-2 scattering where it comes from. It,
oh, yes, 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 sorry. Yeah, they have this 1
well,
over lambda prime.
Like, something like e squared times lambda prime squared.
Mm-hmm.
So it is effective. It is,
yes, yes, of course. It's just that you can, in principle, add more parameters and so on, but this is the first one. Yeah. So it turns out that this simple Pfaffian prime A or determined prime A object gives you this amplitudes in this theory. Okay? And as we said, we have another operation that we can use at hand, which is this KLT. Now we can start to use this theory and KLT it with something we know. For example, this is also a color order theory, right? A theory with colors. So you can do partial amplitudes and so on. You replace this by a Park-Taylor. You immediately get a partial amplitude. So now let's use this partial amplitudes and another partial amplitudes from Yamuse to do KLT to see what we get. That's very natural to do. And it turns out you get Born-Ingfeld or DBI in general. So this is a claim I want to make here. I don't think it's well known before. So if you take the KLT double copy of Yamuse with Yamuse, of course, you know it's gravity. And even, as I said, Yamuse Skater with Yamuse Skater, you get Einstein-Maxwell Skater, which is kind of trivial. But if you take Yamuse Skater and you KLT it with this nonlinear second model that we just found, again, the partial amplitudes of it, turns out you get Dirac-Born-Ingfeld theory. So what does that mean? It means that this theory has a, so nonlinear second model has a Park-Taylor and it has an I right that's Pfaffian prime A squared. And Yamuse scalar, as I just showed you here, has a Park-Taylor and a I left, which is this combination, or more generally here, right? So let's just do the KLT, which means we combine this I right with that I left. We write down a formula. This is literally mix and match, that you have the Pfaffian prime of A squared. And say if you only do Yamuse here, let's even do it simpler. If you only do Yamuse here without the S, you actually only get BI. So everybody knows this Born-Ingfeld theory, which is like a nonlinear generalization of the Maxwell theory that has infinite contact terms for the photons. So this is a formula for it, we claim, because I take only Yamuse, which has a I left, which is Pfaffian prime psi, and I have a nonlinear second model that has a I right, which is Pfaffian prime A squared. So this gives me all the photon scattering in Born-Ingfeld theory, it turns out. Of course, a slight generalization of that is I put the Yamuse scalar on the right hand side. So the left hand side is still this Pfaffian prime A squared. But the right hand side, I put this Pfaffian prime psi reduced and Pfaffian X of scalar. Or in a special case, it becomes Pfaffian prime A and Pfaffian X if I only consider scalars, right? So if I have pure scalars. So this will give you the all the amplitudes of photon and scalar in this DBI theory. So I assume you've heard of this DBI theory, which is a square root of this determinant of eta mu nu minus L square d mu phi, and L f mu nu. So this big determinant, and you take the square root of it. Minus one. So this is just there's a length scale here that enters the game. It's a It's again a higher derivative. It's really a higher derivative theory with photon and scalar interacting, because now you see this is a permutation invariant amplitude, right? It doesn't have color in it, and you cannot do color decomposition. So it describes actually photon, not gluon, and also scalar in this theory. So it's actually quite interesting exercise if you start to compute, at least in this pure scalar case, you can start to compute its 4.6, 8.0 amplitudes and try to compare with what you obtain from this expansion of the square root. You will see exactly the number when you expand the square root to appear as the number in front of your contact term at higher point. Okay, so the last example I want to say, which is also very natural, this time it actually gives us a theory that we didn't know before. Yeah. This one. This is just a shift. So because when you expand the determinant, so what you get is 1 plus d mu phi plus higher derivative terms, and then minus 1. So you just cancel this term. Yeah. So what that means is that you can have d mu phi, and then higher term will have some coefficient coming from square root. And this coefficient is exactly what you obtain as contact term of this formula. So, okay. I've taught you this way of doing a color order theory. You get nonlinear circle model, and KLT with Young-Muse, you get Dirac-Bohn-Ingfeld. But if you can, now you can imagine that since I can KLT Young-Muse with itself, and I can KLT Young-Muse with nonlinear circle model, why not I KLT nonlinear circle model with itself? So I take the double copy of nonlinear circle model. Of course, now you really get even higher derivative, right? You get this already has infinite number of vertices, and now you want to KLT it with itself. And what theory will you obtain? Let me just erase here. It's actually not, this time it's actually a kind of a new theory, because although it also belongs to a larger class of theory known as Galilean theory, which appears in the study of some, say, massive gravity or some context of cosmology. But this is actually a very special theory of it that people who study this class of Galilean theories didn't really pay attention to before. So it's a special case that it's a unique theory that has some property which single them out from all this class of Galilean theory, just like the simplest nonlinear circle model, or you can imagine you can have other effective field theory that doesn't have this square root form regarding DBI type, right? So all these theories are very special. They are not general effective field theory here. So let's take the KLT of nonlinear circle model with itself. This is actually the simplest theory the simplest integrand you can write down now if you think about it. Because each nonlinear circle model has a I write, which is Pfaffian prime of A square, or determinant prime A. Now you just take two copies of that. So what you get is a formula that has Pfaffian prime A to the fourth, or equivalent to the determinant prime A square. So this is the result of KLT two copy of nonlinear circle model, because each copy has a Pfaffian prime A squared. So it's really, if you regard Pfaffian prime A as a weight one basic building block, it's the simplest thing you can write down. So in also there's a hierarchy. In the nonlinear circle model case, you see Pfaffian prime A squared. In the DBI case, if you consider pure scalar, you see a Pfaffian prime A cube, right? And also in the Young-Muse scalar case, you see only one copy of Pfaffian prime A. Now you really push it to the extreme that you have four copies of Pfaffian prime A. And that's the highest you can go. So for example, at 4 point, the amplitude, just look at S times T times U, is quite high derivative. And you can go to higher and higher point to check that this reproduces you the theory called a special Galilean theory, which is the following. You generally have a P Galilean theory like this. M equals three to infinity GM with this so-called total derivative type term LM, which is defined as following. It's a phi times this determinant of d mu I phi, d mu j phi, is a matrix where ij runs from 1 to m minus 1. So in other words, it's just a theory that has the kinetic term and then infinite number of contact term of this form, which is a determinant of d phi matrix. So it's very high derivative. And this can be any coupling in general. So this class of theory is what people call the Galilean theory. And what is special about our theory is that this special Galilean theory is such that all the G odd equals zero and all the G even equals one. So this is a very special theory that again only pick out the even contact term. So in general, if you compute amplitudes from Galilean theory, you see 3-point, 5-point amplitude and so on. But here you only see even number of even multiplicity amplitude. And also all the G even is said to be one. It cannot run from this value. So that's why we call this a special Galilean theory. So it turns out that this simple formula also produces you the, yes. This is a matrix that you have I and J, which is the label for your Lorentz index. So this works in D dimension in general, that I and J runs from 1, 2 to M minus 1. So it's a M minus 1 by M minus 1 matrix, and then you put an additional phi in front of it. This is well known from the construction of Galilean theory, but this one is very special. So let me just end by saying that there's a reason for we pick out all these theories, and some of it more detail I will also come to it tomorrow when I talk about soft theorem, but let me just say there are two classes here, right? One class is this gravity case with gravity, Young Mills, and phi cube there, and it's dimension reduction. The second class is when you start to see more weird theories with scalars. You know, you have nonlinear second model, DBI, and this special Galilean. So just like in the first class, what is the principle that determines you have such a simple integrand, this Fafian of a polarization matrix, it's gauge invariance, right? So if you expand it in Feynman diagram, each numerator has gauge redundancy, but they cancel in the end. So the fact that the final answer is much simpler, it's gauge invariant, means that you can actually come up with this gauge invariant object like this. And for the second class, there's a similar reason. So there's all this theory has a non-linearly realized the symmetry of the scalars. It's just like, this can be probed by the soft scalar theorems. So like when you consider soft pion theorem, you know there's a symmetry there. And here it's similar. So all this non-linear second model, DBI, and this special Galilean theory, they have a soft scalar theorem. So if you take one of the scalar to be soft, the amplitude will vanish, of course, because it only has even multiplicity amplitude. If you take a single scalar to be soft, it will vanish. But if it depends. So if you take this momentum of the scalar as order tau to zero, these three guys will scale as order tau square, and order tau cube. And they are always higher than naively dimensional analysis. So there's this enhanced soft scalar theorem, which is the indication that there is a nonlinearly realized symmetry, just like nonlinear second model and also in this case. So in each Feynman diagram, if you look at its numerator, it doesn't go so fast. Only after you sum it over everybody, you realize there's an enhanced soft limit. I think this is the reason behind this special theory. So why our formula pick it out? Just like gauge invariance is behind the theory with gluons and gravitons. Okay, so I'll end it here, and tomorrow I'll talk about soft theorem and the reduction to 4D in some applications. Thank you.
because you have already enumerated all the probabilities.
No, of course not. These are the object, these are the theories that you build with this simple building block, color, polarization, and this Fafian prime A object. There could be, I mean, as I said, there are also this Einstein Young Mews and the generalized Young Mews scalar. You have some other building blocks, but this, I think, is still a very small set of theories you can describe that has, but there's a reason for them. As these two classes have some specialty about it. Yeah. Oh yes, whenever you have a color ordering, as I said, so in this nonlinear scale model case, or in the Young Mews scalar case, you still have a color ordering. You always have KK and BCJ because the formula contains this Park Taylor factor in it. And then you can KLT them to some. So these are always universal properties of these theories. Yes.
So even after you replace the color factor,
Yes. So no. If you don't have, if you say in DBI or special Galilean, you have a permutation invariant theory without color, then of course you cannot talk about partial amplitudes and any relation among partial amplitudes. So basically, if you have theories with color, you have partial amplitudes and they will satisfy BCJ in all the cases we discussed. And if you take two copies of them, you can build some other theory that doesn't have any color, which is the KLT, result of KLT. And this theory, you cannot talk about BCJ or anything.
Is it orbiters? When you get this amplitude, you can reconstruct the Lagrangian like DBI. You can easily.
No, it's not easy. It's as I said, it's painful to compute its 10-point amplitude to compare. So actually, in these two cases, in these three cases, it still remains a conjecture. How to prove it to all order that this simple formula always gives you to 1,000 order the expansion of this square root, right? So there, I think the proof lies in proving that this square root action or that nonlinear circle model or this special Galilean action is the unique action with this soft limit, this soft behavior. Then you're done. So this, I think there's some progress along this line that some other people have studied this. By the way, you cannot use ordinary BCFW construction to compute its amplitude. So it's a bit more difficult. And along that line, people have found some generalized BCFW to do this, and then also try to argue that this three special Lagrangian is very special for this kind of soft scalar behavior. And then all formula immediately give you this soft scalar behavior. Then you can argue that all formula is uniquely corresponding to such Lagrangian. Yes.